Hi, and welcome to GDC. We are live here again at the Azure booth today. And with me today, I have Brian Vanis from PlayFab.
Brendan Vanis.
Brendan, I'm so sorry.
All right.
Hey, this got off to a great start. So Brendan, you're from PlayFab.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about the history of, you know, when you joined PlayFab and kind of your tour duty there.
Sure. So funny thing is, I was actually in Xbox previously. So I joined in order to help with the run-up of the Xbox 360. I was part of the ATG team, the Advanced Technology Group. I was manager in that team for about 7-8 years. And my main thing was Xbox Live. That was my main surface area for working with developers. And because of that, when PlayFab came into being back around January of 2014, they wanted somebody to come over to be the person running developer relations for them.
Gotcha.
They need to be somebody deeply technical, somebody who has past experience being a game developer, working with game developers, and it just seemed like the perfect fit for me. So I joined in. They were targeting exactly what I felt needed to happen for the industry anyway, which is a ubiquitous back-end service that's, you know, platform agnostic, available to everybody everywhere all the time. And yeah, we've been having a great time building it out, and of course now we're part of Microsoft again.
Yeah, that's right. And I understand too that you were at Microsoft before, is that right?
That's what I was just saying.
Yeah,
I was part of the Xbox ATG team, yeah.
Coming back though, after going away, staying at PlayFab, do you see any differences or what do you think about it now?
Oh, wow. The biggest change is obviously that games is now a pillar of Microsoft. I mean, Phil Spencer is now reporting directly to Satya Nadella, obviously, and it demonstrates a very clear commitment by Microsoft to games in general, and very broadly, not just games on Xbox or Windows, but the entirety of the games ecosystem. And then the acquisition of PlayFab,
right.
You know, being that we are platform agnostic on every platform, it just reinforces that.
Yeah, totally. There's a true commitment there to gaming now. I mean, you see it here too at the you know, the Azure booth at GDC. So
oh, yeah.
A lot of activity going on right around
us.
It's
huge.
Everybody's surrounding. So it's really good to be here. PlayFab always talks about what's called live ops. I always hear this term thrown around, and I think a lot of people probably aren't as familiar with this. So how would you describe live ops to somebody?
So live ops is live game operations, and it's all the things that you do to manage your title once you launch it. I mean, games, it used to be were packaged goods, right? You just create the game, ship it to market, and then move on to your next game. But these days when you ship a game, you've got a commitment going forward to your players. You're going to run that game and manage it. You're going to monitor it and make changes and adjustments to it based upon the things that you're seeing.
Yeah, gotcha. And so that concept is what PlayFab does primarily, right?
Yes.
So today you want to talk about a piece of it. I know we've got up here on the screen the different components of PlayFab, but today's topic is really around the real-time analytics side of it.
Yes.
So when we think about the analytics side, we think about data in games, like how has that impacted game development? Like just the data collection of it?
Sure. I've got a few slides I can show you on that.
Let's look at
what this represents is basically the fundamentals of PlayFab. We built out a lot of core services, you know, authentication systems, data systems, in-app purchasing, catalog of goods, et cetera. But the core then, beyond that, was having everything be feeding into a real-time analytics system that then becomes this stream of data that you can use. Because if you go all the way back to like 2000, 2001, these are the top grossing games for each year.
Right.
And you can see that there was only one game out of all of this
that
made the transition.
Yeah.
Right, The Sims. 2000, 2001, it was on both lists. Every other game is different between the years. But if you jump forward to just a couple of years ago, 2016, and then moving into 2017, 70% of these games were in both years. And that's because these games were being managed as live entities. They were being managed using good live ops techniques. People were in the development teams were working with their customers and monitoring them because when you look at like your forums, for example, you can work with your community there, but realistically you're only going to be hearing from about 10% of them.
Yeah.
So monitoring and the things that they say might not necessarily sync up to what they're actually expecting or doing in the game. Because that's just what they're saying. Monitoring the way that players are actually interacting with the game is the way you get true data about what you are doing and what you need to do
going
forward.
And these particular games here, do all of them do that particular thing? They monitor it real time or update it?
Looking at the list, I would say yes. Each one of these games is managing their games using live ops.
And most
techniques.
Of those are, I can see these are mostly mobile titles. Does this also apply to like, you know, PC and everything else now?
Yes, this applies to absolutely everything now. Okay. One of the reasons why you see a lot of mobile titles in the top grossing games list nowadays is just because of the overall addressable market space. There's a lot more mobile phones out there than there are of just about anything else.
Right.
Well,
gotcha.
Except possibly for PCs.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, when you're managing this, what you're effectively doing is you're taking all the data coming in, and you might have some ideas about, you know, what you're seeing and why you're seeing it and what changes you might want to make. So you test those ideas out, check your data, and then you iterate on them.
Right.
It's a very cyclical process. So as an example of that, you might have a game where, you know, you get in a bunch of players. Now, initial acquisition of players, your day one is, you know, it's not going to be 100%. It never is. So the day one might not be unusual to look like that. But you see the level one here. That's after the players actually invested some time playing in the game.
Right.
So having a drop off that sharp would be kind of a warning sign. So what you want to do is have some views of the data where you dig in and you look at it and you say, okay, why am I seeing this? What might be the things causing this? And in this particular example, we're saying, okay, there's an achievement early on of the player defeating a boss. And what I'm seeing is that a lot of people who don't get that achievement are dropping out of the game. So maybe you might say, okay, well, let's make an A-B experiment out of this. And let's say you've got a control group, but then you're going to have, in this case, up to 4 A-B treatment groups. And in each treatment group, you're going to vary the experience. So in one of them, you're going to say, okay, after failing to beat the boss for 5 times, let's make him 80% as strong.
Yep.
And in another one, 60% as strong. And then the other two, it's like, okay, maybe after 10 times trying to beat him and failing, make him 80% as strong, 60% as strong. Okay.
So you're doing actually experiment to 2 different experiences for 2 different groups?
It's actually 5 different treatment groups.
5, okay.
A control group, and then 4 variations that you're doing upon the play experience to see which one of those things gets you a better response rate in terms of improving retention.
Right, okay.
Because then you can go back then to your data and check it. And if you compare this to the original slide I showed, there's a significant improvement to the retention on that level 1.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, everything you might want, but you're seeing some significant improvement. So what you want to do is then look at the treatment group results and say, okay, was one of them clearly a leader ahead of the others in terms of improvement?
Gotcha.
Okay, then let's collapse the game into that, have everybody use that one, and then start in on maybe a new experiment trying some other data to see if you can do things.
Oh, this is super interesting, because I think everybody's experienced like some boss or something that's too hard, right? You never get past and you get frustrated and you just kind of quit the game.
Exactly,
That's what you're saying. You could actually test to see, hey, did I make it too easy, or what's the exact right level?
Right.
And then can you just update your game like that? Or, okay.
That is specifically the idea. So games are managed live these days. So part of the thing that we do, if you look at the all of the components that we have here, content is certainly one of them. So content includes things like title data. Title data is just, it's configuration data. It lives in the cloud. And so it controls a huge range of things. In a lot of games, it might be like the strength of monsters or the speed of vehicles, things like that. And as you tweak and tune these factors, you're doing that based upon the data that you get in to try to improve retention rates, spend rates, all kinds of factors. In particular, what you're really trying to go for, I mean, what it comes down to, is the player's enjoyment. If the players are enjoying your game, you are successful.
Sure.
Because that's what you're going for.
Right.
So because this all lives in the cloud, you just make an adjustment to it there.
Yep.
You don't go through any kind of certification process because you're not changing code.
Right.
You just make the change in the cloud. Immediately, your players are using the new data, and so they have a new experience.
Right. Okay. So that's right. So you're managing the game live, making changes, and you can figure out real time. So real time sounds like something a step beyond that even. Like, why is real time even more important in this case?
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, the example that I showed you is you're evaluating data over time and looking at it. But when you talk about the data, you really, really need it to be real time, because a lot of the changes that you're going to be making are going to be sensitive, particularly if you're talking about a free-to-play game where you have in-app purchases. So when you push out a change to the game, if you see a sudden sharp drop in purchases or a sudden sharp increase in errors because of something you've done, you don't want to have to wait an hour. You don't even want to have to wait 5 minutes to know about that. You need to know immediately. So whenever you make a major change to your game, or even, maybe even a minor change, you're going to be sitting there looking at the dashboard.
dashboard and, you know, refreshing right. and seeing, okay, it looks like things are going well, or, whoa, wait, something changed that we do not like the look of, let's roll back.
Gotcha, okay. So this sounds like you have to track a lot of things. How do you actually do that in a game? Like, how do you track all that stuff going on? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, we provide a number of dashboards okay. in PlayFab. So on our main dashboard, you get all of the essentials in terms of tracking on API calls, error rates, the purchases that are being made. Yeah. And you can also dig into the event history, which is kept up to date in real time as well. And you can look at all of the details of all of the events as they're coming in.
Okay.
So basically, you've got a full real-time event system, and you've got a dashboard that gives you the ability to actually watch it in real time
gotcha.
And see, you know, look for trending, look for error rates, all of that.
Right. So those of you're talking about a bunch of events that happen. Do you supply events, or like, do I make events? How does that work?
Right. Right. All of those core events that we built out to start, excuse me, core services we built out to start. So the statistics and data systems and all of that. All of those automatically generate events. So when a player logs in,
okay.
When a new statistic is reported, when they make a purchase, all of those things generate events automatically. You don't have to worry about any of that. But games need to have the ability to generate custom events because they do a lot of custom things. So yeah, we also provide API calls for you to generate those custom events, both at the player level and the title level, since there's a significant difference between the two.
Right.
But then those feed into the system so that you can use those for your analytics as well.
Gotcha. So you provide the basics of the system all around. But say I'm a developer, I have a custom event inside my game. I can actually just create my own event that feeds into your eventing system,
exactly.
and then I can view. Okay, that's very, very interesting. So I can extend the event system to do something. When you do the analysis of it or viewing of it, like, what is the visualization? How does that work? Like, how do I see these events? Is it all text, or like, what does that look like?
There's a couple of different ways, but the most convenient way in the game manager, if you're looking at like the overall event history for the game, we provide a GUI interface, basically, for managing your game. It's everything. It's visualization of your events.
Okay.
It's the way that you make changes to your data. Like I talked about the configuration data. You can make the title data changes right there in the service. You can manage all your players. It's got a complete detailed permission system with a role model on top of it, so you can create a role for customer service reps so they can only see and modify players but not change your game configuration, for example, or see your revenue information. And so that way you can give everybody the right tools that they need right there in the game manager to manage the game, you know, in the ways that are appropriate to each of the different roles that you have in your team.
Yeah, gotcha.
Within the tool, when you talk about data specifically, you've got the full stream where you can see all of the details coming through for all of the data. But you've also got a visualizer where you can see an overall graph of all of the events over time. You can do summations on different types of events. You can group them, that sort of thing, so that you could see. You could say, show me just my login events and group them by platform.
Oh, nice.
So that you could see, you know, the breakdown of how many people you have on each of the platforms over time.
So you can slice and dice that to get the right view that you need to make a decision, right? Can I create a custom view, or do you just use the out-of-the-box ones? How does that work?
So for deep dives on your data, where you're really digging in to get into custom information about your data, you'll want to be visualizing the data directly yourself. And that's something where we provide a number of different ways to get to the data.
Okay.
Whether it's webhooks or being able to send the data out to an archive store for you. But we also provide some integrations with back-end data platforms where you can send your data out to. Including Segment and Snowflake, and soon we're going to be doing Power BI as well to give you the full visualization capabilities of that platform.
Yeah, the visualization sounds like a very powerful part of this too, right?
Yeah.
And so this is super interesting. So now I can create a game out there, and I can have a pulse of what's going on with it instantly,
exactly.
right? That's
yeah.
the real-time aspect.
And that's what's so critical,
yeah.
is being able to see what your game's doing in real-time and respond to it effectively.
So do you recommend people to change the way they create games these days to must-have? Is this a must-have for people these days?
I would say so. Even a game that is a single-player game, a point-of-purchase single-player game, no free-to-play, no multiplayer, nothing like that, you're still going to want to have the information about your game, how players are playing it, for purposes of making your game better. And you're certainly going to be shipping out DLC, new content.
Yeah.
And as you do that, being able to have still your configuration in the cloud gives you the ability to ship out some content, look at how it's being played, look at how players are responding to it, and fix anything that you want to without having to push out a whole new update.
Yeah, that's super powerful, super powerful. If you think about this, though, so you're collecting a lot of data and things like that. that data needs to be protected in some ways. You know, what is like, what is Microsoft and PlayFab, what are you guys focusing on to keep, make sure that data remains safe? I mean, it feels like that's a...
Yeah, we've been through pretty extensive security reviews and processes with PlayFab, even well before the acquisition by Microsoft, which I've got to say, as part of that, we went through a deep dive security review, which was absolutely fantastic. And what I can say is that our security reviews have all passed with flying colors at this point, effectively. We're the back end for a number of companies that provide, well, they provide games to a wide range of players,
right,
and they're
right.
very sensitive. I mean, you've got considerations of COPPA, you know, the Children Online Privacy and Protection Act. You've got the upcoming GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation.
That's a big deal.
Oh, it's huge. Right? All those things are things that we are addressing in our back end, or I should say already have addressed or are continuing to address.
Great.
And we're even going beyond the regulations in the GDPR, for example, to make sure that we have the highest level of security around the data possible, so that we're protecting player privacy, so that we're protecting the data for your title, so that only the people within your team and only the right people within your team have access to it.
Good. That's super important, too. So this sounds all fascinating. Could you give me, are there any examples of some games we might know of people that have implemented this or done this?
Sure. I mean, the best example right now, because they, you know, they're here with us throughout GDC. They did a great talk on Wednesday afternoon, is Fluffy Fairy.
Yeah, I interviewed them yesterday. So,
the German guys, they're fantastic. And for their game, Idle Miner Tycoon, they did this rapid prototyping to get the game to market. It was literally 8 weeks. They just spent 8 weeks building up the game.
Wow.
Shipped it to iOS and Android, and then just iterated on it. Did very organic user acquisition, iterated on the game using player feedback, and then after a while, they kicked in all of their live ops. Using all the techniques that we're talking about throughout the conference and that they talked about on Wednesday, they started this overall live ops campaign, managing the game in real time, monitoring the behaviors of users, trying different experiments with, you know, changes to the gameplay.
Yeah.
And they've been hugely successful with that.
Yeah.
If you look at the classic old school metrics that you see for games where a game would launch and then drop off in usage and go to the long tail. Games these days, and the Fluffy Fairy guys, they're a perfect example of that. Their game launched, and then when they kick in their live ops, you see them growing and growing and growing, and they're still growing that game to this day.
Yeah, they say they had like 30 million users now, that's crazy amount of people. So that's great, man. I love the game too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It's so fun. It's so good. So probably a good place to kind of wrap up is what are you guys thinking when you look at real-time analytics and PlayFab and like where this is going, some of the future directions of things,
I mean, being now part of Microsoft is going to be one of the greatest things for this, because it gives us access to so many tools that we didn't have before. Just the integration of Power BI on its own is going to give a wide range of visualization options and new options for the ways you can slice and dice your data in the system. But also, going beyond that, there's machine learning that we're going to be able to incorporate into the system for doing things like automated segmentation of users, taking into account not just gameplay information, but let's say you hook up chat into that. So we'll have, you know, maybe real-time speech-to-text, text-to-speech, and being able to then evaluate that text.
Oh, wow.
And then being able to automatically segment the users into appropriate groups. You're playing with people who, you know, just naturally you're going to have a better experience with.
Yeah, that's interesting. Machine learning, that's a super interesting area. Like,
When
you apply machine learning to segmentation, how would that work?
It's a variety of things. I mean, in machine learning at its core, what it's doing is it's taking in a massive amount of data, and it's looking for areas of significance within the data.
Okay.
And then once it identifies areas of significance within the data, it can then take those and use them in order to make decisions.
Right.
So the decision in this case might be, this is a player who, the way they play the game is they play in a more casual way. It might be a shooter or whatever, but they don't play it like 24 hours a day. They're not playing for 8 hours at a time. No, this is somebody who plays occasionally. And when they play, the pattern of behavior that you see is if they're playing with people who are the super hardcore best players, they have very short play sessions.
Yeah.
But then when they play with people who are, following the same pattern they are, they have longer play sessions. Well, clearly, a longer play session is kind of indicative of having a better time.
Right.
So that's just the most trivial of examples, but it's that kind of thing.
No, that's actually super helpful because, you're using the power, like what a person would naturally figure out. using a machine to kind of figure those things out. That's super interesting. Feels like to me this is an area for a lot of growth and investment in the future. It sounds like, and it also sounds like it's changed the way games are made.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Totally. Yep. So that's fantastic. Well, hey, Brendan. Got it right this time. Hey, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah,
it's been good.
Be here. Thanks.
Hope you enjoy the rest of GDC. And for everyone out there, thank you for tuning in. And we'll be back in just a little bit with some more live sessions. Thanks.